It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. We've been doing this for many years and the years pass very quickly. Hi there, Bill. How are we?
Yeah, hi, Howard. You're quite right. They do pass very quickly indeed. I hope you and all the listeners have had a very good Christmas celebration and now looking forward, you know, to a happy and healthy new year, I hope.
Oh, well, that's very good of you. Well, we've made it to another year, so let's have a look back at the key financial events in 2018. Would you say it was a fairly uneventful year from a financial reform point of view?
No, I wouldn't really. I can see in many respects why one might consider it to be uneventful, because the gyroscopic bull market that we've benefited from shooting up through the roof for the last pretty much 10 years or so, almost uninterrupted, has clearly come to an end in the short term. The FTSE 100 and the FTSE 250, which is that sector of the index, which is perhaps smaller companies still worth fortunes, but still smaller companies than the FTSE 100, of course, and even the Dow Jones. In addition, all of them down in their local currency terms by around 15 to 16%. Not a year in which one would have been overly excited by the returns from the market, but that is the nature of the gyrations of the market when you consider that the declines that have taken place over the last two or three months in particular, and for different reasons, Trump and his attack on trade, world trade, the Brexit issues infecting the UK and Europe. It's not unexpected that they would go away a bit in the face of those things, and that may, and we may not have got to the bottom of it yet, but the simple fact is, of course, the only ground that's been lost really is the ground that was made in the last 12 months, 18 months or so. The performance of each of those indices over the last 10 years has been astronomical. I mean, doubled and in some cases nearly trebled in value if you look at the currency returns in addition. So it has been reasonably eventful, just simply not eventful in the positive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So what you're saying then, Bill, is it fair to say that 2018 was not the best year? And what about the stock markets in a bit more detail?
Yeah, well, I think, if you looked at the stock markets now, and you looked at the track record of the stock market over the short term, the last, 12 months or so, you might be persuaded to think it's not the place for you to be. But, the people who invest and who are successful are essentially marathon runners in investment terms and not sprinters. Remaining invested in markets over the longer term has always, historical track records will prove this, have always produced the best returns. I mean, when you see this kind of fluctuation in the markets, to sell or buy, depending on the position of the markets, to chase short-term gains. But that really helps the long-term wealth creation that we're looking for in what you might describe as holistic wealth management, where we're looking across the board at making money for individuals by investment management over the longer term. It's an emotional activity, investing, and we have to be aware that taking a snapshot of the markets at any particular point in time is bound to impact upon the decisions you make from an emotional point of view. And as those numbers, the declines I've just mentioned suggest, you might not be tempted to enter the market right now as an individual and as a lay investor, whereas we have been talking to individuals about who have been considering making investment, that the time may now be appropriate, given that there's 15% better value in those markets and you're going to invest in it 4 or 5 years. Why wouldn't you capture that 15% decline? Because the markets defy the law of gravity and they will be going back up again, perhaps not immediately, but over the next 4 or 5 years, they're almost certainly going to regain their grounds. And so what investors have to be aware of is not trying to enter or exit the markets at a particular point in time, because who knows whether it's the right or the wrong time. When markets peak, we all feel excited and we're tempted, to get into investments, and often it's the worst time to do that because then they can fade away. If you look at the market peak in the FTSE 100, the FTSE 250, the Dow Jones Industrial Average Index over the last 12 months, they peaked out in the middle of the year. And if that had been the point in time at which you invested, you would have suffered short-term losses. But if you invested for the longer term, holding your own and staying with the track of the index over the period of time that we're talking about, 5, 6, 7 years, you're almost certainly going to make significant returns, I would imagine.
Yeah. So I suppose, Bill, your advice to listeners who own stocks and shares is to hold tight.
Yeah, I mean, look, just to re-emphasise the point I was just trying to make, if you can imagine the roller coaster, we've described this as before, of the markets and the emotional response to it. You know, when the markets are ploughing along at a relatively low rate of performance and even in negative territory, the emotion that one is confronted by is of course worry. As they begin to improve, then obviously that develops the emotion of optimism. As they continue to improve, you can be quite thrilled at the thought that you're in a market which is rising, to the point at which they seem excessively high and you can become euphoric. And then following that, there's complacency. You know, you can think that, well, I'm glad I'm in here, this is a good place to be. But as they start to fall away, there is a tendency for people to remain in denial about the fact that the markets are beginning to decline. And that's often followed by the hope that they will cease their decline and start to go up again. When they don't, you tend to get that emotion of fear, often followed shortly after by panic. And at the bottom of the market, there is a sort of capitulation when people often decide to cash in because they're despondent. And then as the market starts to rise again, that emotion of indifference creeps in, thinking I've already been bitten once. As they continue to rise, there's still scepticism, indeed followed by caution, until you return to the starting point of worry again, when they move back up into optimism and the thrill regions of your emotions. And to deny all of that is simply to invest in decent quality businesses with decent advice in terms of wealth management and wealth creation and wealth preservation, and make sure that when you invest, you are there for the long term. As I say, you should be a marathon runner and not a sprinter.
Yeah. Well, there was some good news for the savers in the summer. UK interest rates went up after 9 years. Can we expect more rises next year?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, the latest decision from the Bank of England to increase interest rates was the first time since 2009 that the rates have gone above 0.5%. The rate rises have been very scarce in recent years, and it's a difficult one to call this, Howard. Usually, interest rate increases are used to dampen an overheated economy and bring inflation closer to the Bank of England's 2% target set by the government. With UK inflation, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, down to 2.4% in the middle of the year, albeit still above target, and modest gross domestic product growth, the economy is showing signs of slow recovery. Now, in the midst of all this, we have the Brexit issues going on. And as such, the governor of the Bank of England has not ruled out lowering rates again to counteract Brexit pressures. He's reiterated in any event that future increases, he has said, will be gradual and limited, were his words. And he said unlikely to exceed 3% for the next 2 decades, which, despite the fact that there may be a little good news for savers in cash deposit accounts, frankly, when rates are at 3%, the returns on cash deposits are going to be lower than that, whereas over the next 2 decades, you would expect equity markets and bonds to produce incredibly good results compared to those sort of returns.
So here in Spain, Bill, 2018 was a quiet year for UK pensions. Mm. But do you think we can see changes in the future?
Yeah, I think we might. I mean, first of all, we talked about the interest rate increase, and generally speaking, higher interest rates means better returns from UK bonds, which are usually the foundation stone of financing pension funds and pension benefits. So as a result, if you are looking to buy a retirement income, for example, through an annuity, an increased interest rate could potentially boost the amount that you might secure as a long-term pension. However, this may not be such good news for anyone who's looking to transfer out of a final salary pension scheme, because the high transfer values that have been offered in the recent past in exchange for giving up generous lifetime retirement benefits, that's likely to decrease as the providers of pensions now can find it easier to finance guaranteed pension payments. It's another one of these areas. It's a scenario really where you do need to take a professional and independent advice to make sure that you aren't making the wrong judgment at the wrong point in time. As things stand at the moment, there's a possibility, of course, as the Brexit moves forward. We're not entirely sure what will happen to the opportunity that currently exists to transfer your UK pension fund to one of these qualifying recognised overseas pension schemes, because once the UK departs the European Economic Area, the transfers which are currently available may no longer be available, and indeed they may become subject to the same tax charge that applies at the moment to QROPs set up outside of the EU, which is a 25% transfer charge, an overseas tax charge. Now, on leaving the EU, the UK loses its obligation under EU law to maintain the freedom of movement for capital, offering more scope, I think, for the Treasury to recoup revenue from UK nationals living in Europe. The Chancellor has already described the tax benefits of pension schemes as being a very expensive part of the UK budget.
Well, moving on to taxation, as you mentioned it, Bill, the Common Reporting Standard entered a new phase in September. Can you remind listeners of what the situation is today with regards to tax authorities sharing information on our financial affairs?
Yeah, I'm sure listeners to our discussions on a weekly basis had, going back the last 15 or 60, 17 years even, to the various EU savings tax directive and the matters that have come our way since then. It's culminated now in a worldwide automatic, and I think that's the key word, automatic exchange of information treaty. From last September, tax authorities across the world, including Spain and most other all the continental European countries and the UK, began sharing and receiving new information on their taxpayers' offshore assets and income. It's carried out under what, as you say, is called the Common Reporting Standard. It's an automatic exchange of financial account information system. So far, more than 100 countries have committed to obtain information from financial institutions and pass it on to the client's country of residence. About 50 of them started collecting data in 2016, and they made the first exchange of information in September 2017. And now another 50-odd countries, including Switzerland, Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, Canada, Panama, and lots of the Caribbean jurisdictions, began collecting data last year, and they were ready to share the information by the end of September this year, which is now already in place. Now, a number of the world's smaller economies are due to undertake the first exchanges next year, and eventually it's pretty obvious that there will be very few economies that remain outside of this common reporting standard. As if I tell you that in 2019-20, countries like Albania, the Maldives, Nigeria, Peru, they're all now undertaking the first exchanges next year. So even these relatively small economies, often which are thought of as being outside of any control, they're now joining the common reporting standard.
Yeah. Well, earlier in 2018, it was reported that the Spanish tax authorities were looking at people who claim to be living in Gibraltar but may actually be tax resident in Spain. Is this indicative of how strict the tax authorities are these days with regards to tax fraud? And do you think that British expatriates in Spain need to be extra careful to get their tax planning right these days?
Yeah, I mean, Howard, without mincing our words, you and I both know of the practice that has existed for decades of having property and living most of the time in Spain and then crossing the border into Gibraltar to carry out financial transactions and moving backwards and forwards and claiming to be a resident of Gibraltar. It's got a little more sophisticated of late. Many people rent an apartment in Gibraltar and have their main home in Spain and still claim to be resident of Gibraltar. Well, Spain have had enough of that. So people who split their time between Spain and Gibraltar are now under increased scrutiny by the Spanish tax office. There is camera recognition of number plates and of individuals' facial recognition at the border these days. It's very difficult to persuade a tax authority on investigation that you're a true resident of Gibraltar if you cross the border backwards and forwards three or four times a month, and they can track the dates and times and ask you the reasons why you were there. So the Hacienda have collected about 20 million so far, around on average 125,000 euros from 160 individuals who were claiming tax resident in Gibraltar when actually they'd been resident in Andalusia in Spain. And it kind of highlights how important it is for people who live a cross-border lifestyle to get their tax planning right. And with, you know, the tools and equipment and the systems that are now in place, providing, in a sense, for global tax transparency, it is easier than ever to get caught out if your affairs are not in order. Getting it wrong, even if it's unintentional, can and does often prove very, very costly. And frankly, you know, being resident in Gibraltar but having a Spanish bank account and owning a house in Spain, even if it's a holiday home, is proving to be enough to raise a red flag to the authorities, especially if the mail for your personal use is received at your Spanish address. And so as a consequence of that, if you are living a cross-border lifestyle, living in Spain and Gibraltar, the important thing to do is to get your tax planning right so that you aren't breaching the regulations for either territory, and you can therefore be confident that you're not going to be the subject of an investigation or a review of your residence and or tax status.
Yeah. How can people get in touch with Levins Franks then if they feel they're in that situation or for other advice?
Well, you know, Levins Franks operates in Spain, in the very regions we've just been talking about, as well as all other commonly thought of as expatriate territories around the costas of Spain, going in as far as Madrid and other central areas of Spain. So if you'd like to talk to someone from Levins Franks about your personal affairs, you can get hold of the business through the website at www.levinsfranks.com. There are all of the office addresses are there, as are the individual names of the partners in each of those offices, with a short biopic of each of them. So if you would like to talk, please don't hesitate to call the offices.
But before we say goodbye, Bill, can I wish you and your family and everyone at Levins Franks a happy and successful new year? And, well, look forward to many more.
Yeah, me too, Howard. Look, it's very kind of you. Thank you very much indeed. It's an enjoyable exercise each week, sharing these thoughts with you and our listeners. I, like you, I wish you and your family and all of our listeners a very happy, healthy and prosperous 2019.
We'll speak next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Take care.